This ceremony was officiated by Jeffrey Shugan Arnold Roshi at Zen Mountain Monastery. Shugan Roshi is the abbot of the monastery and the Zen Center of New York City. This talk, like all of our talks, is offered free of charge. If you'd like to make a donation or find out more about our retreats and residency programs, visit our website at cmm.org. Thanks for listening.
Good morning, everybody. And welcome to this morning's Jikai, or receiving the precepts ceremony, particularly to family and friends of the Jikai recipients. So from the very beginning of Buddhism, the Buddha made very clear that not only is morality an essential part of the path, of the Eightfold Path, but that we ourselves are moral beings intrinsically, that we experience the world in terms of what is skillful and unskillful, to use Buddhist language, what is destructive, binding, negating of life and all that is good in life, and what is affirming, positive, generous of all that is life. And particular importance for us is of what is both binding and beneficial towards the path, in the path, and towards liberation. And so from the very beginning, a clear establishment of moral teachings and practices are part of our tradition, and these have come down to us in the particular form of precepts that will be I'll be giving to these students today. These 16 bodhisattva precepts, the bodhisattva being an enlightened being, a person on a path of enlightenment who is dedicated and dedicating their life to the well-being of themselves and others. And really, that is the sort of preeminent force, the driving force, the guiding force in their lives. But how do we do that? Most people want to live lives that are good and meaningful. Most people want to have a beneficial effect on others. And we live in a world that is in distress. And so how do we actually do that? How do we do that as practitioners of the Buddha Dharma? And so this ceremony today is a passage for these students. It is the continuation of their practice up to this point and the beginning of something new. The precepts in Buddhism are based in wisdom and in the enlightenment of the Buddha and of all enlightened beings, and is based in selflessness, that the fundamental nature of all things is without an abiding or permanent self. And that rather than that leading to indifference or an attitude that nothing matters, which is really just another mental construct, rather that realization makes most urgent and most important all that is life. It makes an imperative, really, of living a compassionate life. And so they are the precepts themselves, which we will be going through in the course of this Jikai ceremony. And there are, very importantly, the vows that each student makes to those specific teachings, those practices, because it's the vow that gives it life. Without the vow, they're just words, or they're nice ideas, or they may even be something that someone wants to live by, but it's the vow that binds the student to that teaching, which then becomes their path. So we'll begin, and these students have been in training for some years. We ask people to be in formal training for at least a couple of years. Usually, often it's longer than that, because this is entirely of their own doing, and that's very important, that each student brings themselves to these precepts, asks to receive them as vows, take them as vows, so that they are each taking full responsibility for that. Now they'll do three sets of bows, and the first set of bows is to the Buddha. And so this is recognizing the interdependency that we have, that none of us lives on our own. None of us is in this moment on our own. None of us has arrived here on our own. We're all dependent on really a vast web of life in order to be here today. And so in recognition of that, the students first do the set of bows to the Buddha, our original teacher, and then we'll do a set, now we'll do a set of bow, a series of bows to their parents. If their parents are here, they will bow directly to them. If their parents are not here or they're deceased, they will go into the Buddha hall and bow in the direction of their parents. And this is to acknowledge our blood lineage, our family lineage, who have given us this gift of life and human life. The expression of gratitude is a very important part of our practice. It's really just a simple recognition of all that we receive in our lives, are receiving in every moment. But it's important not just to know that, because we can know that at a distance. We can know that in an abstract way. And when it's abstract, then we forget. And when we forget, everything becomes distant. And so it's important to bring that up very close, to know that deep within ourselves, within our own body and mind, and to express it. And so there's much expression of gratitude in our practice. This last set of bows will be to the teacher, the Kai Shi, the precepts teacher, which today is myself. Something that becomes clear in this recognition of our interdependence, our codependence, is our mutual influence on each other. And that while that influence is always there, even with people we've never met, because of that vast web of self-nature and of karma, that people that are within, who are within our realm of life, we have more influence on, and we are influenced by more tangibly, more directly. And for a bodhisattva, that's of great urgency, because it means we should want to have the best impact possible on others. In other words, whatever the results of our own lives and actions are, it becomes of uppermost importance that be as beneficial to them as possible. In other words, we get tangled up in each other's lives, so make it a good tangle. Next, we will do the invocation of the three treasures. The three treasures are the Buddha, Dharma, and Sangha, the essence of the path of Buddhist practice of your body and mind. The Buddha is the Buddha Shakyamuni, and so we take refuge in his enlightenment, in his example, in the fact of his human life, and his devotion of all of his enlightened life to you, to us, being able to be here today, but also to Buddha nature, his realization of Buddha nature. And so we invoke self-nature of the Buddha and all enlightened beings. We invoke the Dharma, which is the teachings of the Buddha, to while they are always present in every moment and everything, we invoke them to make them more present, more real here. And the Dharma of all things, the real nature of all things here in this hall. And the Sangha, the treasure of Buddhist practitioners. But all beings have Buddha nature. So for us, all beings are Sangha, past, present, and future. Our lives are dedicated to their well-being, those we have never met, and those that you practice with, our brothers and sisters. And so we invoke the three treasures. I'll do this twice in Japanese in recognition of our lineage, and once in English. Namo jipo butsu namo jipo ho namo jipo so namo hanshi shakyamuni butsu
Namu Dai Dai Hi Kyu Ku Kanze On Bo Sa Namu Dai Jin Fugen Bo Sa Namu Dai Shin Manju Shri Bo Sa Namu Koso Joyo Dai Shi Namu Tai So Jo Sa Dai Shi Namu Riki Dai So Shi Bo Sa Tsu. Be one with the Buddha in the 10 directions. Be one with the Dharma in the 10 directions. Be one with the Sangha in the 10 directions. Be one with our original teacher, Shakyamuni Buddha. Be one with the great, compassionate Avalokiteshvara Bodhisattva. Be one with the great, wise Samantabhadra Bodhisattva. Be one with the great, wise Manjushri Bodhisattva. Be one with Koso Joyo Daishi. Be one with Taiso Joyso Daishi. Be one with the successive great ancestors. Namo Jipo Butsu, Namo Jipo Ho, Namo Jipo So, Namo Hanshi Shakyamuni Butsu, Namo Daizi Dai Hi Kyu Ku Kanze On Bosa, Namo Daijin Fugen Bosa, Namo Daishin Manjushri Bosa, Namo Koso Joyo Daishi, Namo Taiso Josai Daishi, Namo Riki Daiso Shi Bosatsu. Next we'll do the Goth of Atonement. We spoke about this during the week, that in living an enlightened life, living a compassionate life, we have to face that which is not compassion. In trying to bring forth generosity and compassion and wisdom, we have to face anger and greed and delusion. And we have to face it within ourselves, and we have to face it within others in our world. Otherwise, we will not be able to live these vows. And so how do we do that, particularly with our own actions that have been hurtful, past and present, in such a way that we take full responsibility, that we live these vows, that we address any consequences of those actions and move forward unencumbered, so that we continue to practice a life of non-attachment, so that those attachments don't accumulate and bind us, so that our compassion becomes bound. And so the Goth of Atonement is a very important practice, really an essential practice for us in being able to do this. And so it recognizes our karma, the actions we take based on intention, and in particular the hurtful or harmful karma that we create here, expressed as evil karma, that it arises because of our various states of consciousness that are bound up in attachment and fear and anger and greed, pride and jealousy. It's a long list, actually. And that is brought forth by our thoughts, our words, and our actions, right? It's not abstract. It's not philosophical. It's what we think. It's what we say. And it's what we do every moment. Now I atone for it all. I take full responsibility. I don't separate myself from it. Regardless of the circumstances, which at times can be quite difficult, quite adverse, make it very difficult actually to live these vows. My actions belong to me. Your actions belong to you. That's what we're taking responsibility for. And in that way, we are empowered to address, to learn, to develop, and to step forward. So we'll do this together three times in call and response. So everyone is invited to the Goth of Atonement. So please, Choki and everyone, Gassho, please. All evil karma ever committed by me since of old. On account of my beginningless greed, anger, and ignorance. Born of my body, mouth, and thought. Now I atone for it all. All evil karma ever committed by me since of old. On account of my beginningless greed, anger, and ignorance. Born of my body, mouth, and thought. Atone for it all.
Now I atone for it all.
All evil karma ever committed by me since of old.
All evil karma ever committed by me since of old.
On account of my beginningless greed, anger, and ignorance. Born of my body, mouth, and thought.
Born of my body, mouth, and thought.
Now I atone for it all.
Now I atone for it all.
Richard, if you could shift one to the left, the other side, and Christine to the right. There we go. Okay, so I can see you. And also remember to give me your eyes. And now we'll do what's called shasui, which is a spurging. And this is just with mountain water, which literally comes from the bowels of the mountain, the womb of the mountain, and a pine bough. This is a recognition. This is not a purification. Everything is already pure. This is a recognition of the mind of the Buddha passing all the way down to this time, place. And for those doing the ongoing studying the Dogen fascicle, you know, take note of all the ways in which the four elements are present here. That is not an accident. Next, we'll take refuge in the three treasures. And this is the beginning of the receiving of the precepts. And we spoke about this during the week. That without the three treasures, it is the Buddha Dharma. It is the Buddhist path. It is the Buddhist awakening. And although that awakening itself is not Buddhist, right? It does not belong to you or me. It has no domain. It cannot be possessed. It is the nature of all beings, all people, all things. The Buddha Dharma is a path to that awakening, to what we speak of as Buddha nature. The three treasures are the Buddha Dharma and Sangha, are that universe. That universe also belongs to everyone. We do not possess it. But as Buddhists, we recognize this in a particular way, this universality, that which belongs to everyone. And we take refuge. And that is the heart of the matter, taking refuge. As I often say, when students' practice is strong, it's because the three treasures are present and embodied. When our practice is not strong, it's because the three treasures have become distant. And so taking refuge is our ongoing practice, both in moments such as these where we take refuge in this particular way, in this ancient way that goes back to the Buddha, but also by how we live our lives. That's also how we take refuge. And so again, I'll do this in both Japanese and English, and in call and response, and everyone is invited to take refuge. Namukie butsu namukie ho namukie so kie butsu mujo san kie ho riji san. Kie so wagosan, kie bukkyo, kie hokyo, kie so kyo. I take refuge in the Buddha.
I take refuge in the Dharma.
I take refuge in the Sangha. I take refuge in the Buddha, the incomparably honored one.
I take refuge in the Buddha, the incomparably honored one.
I take refuge in the Dharma, honorable for its purity.
I take refuge in the Dharma, honorable I take refuge in the Sangha, honorable for its harmony. I have taken refuge in the Buddha.
I have taken refuge in the Dharma.
I have taken refuge in the Sangha. Namukiye butsu namukiye ho namukiye so kiye butsu mujo san kiye ho riji san kiye so wago san kiye bukyo kiye hokyo kiye so kyo.
The non-possessiveness of the three treasures of these precepts of everything is of particular importance, not just because it's in alignment with reality and because it is this is a path of non-attachment, because it helps to prevent us from self-righteousness. And whenever we're dealing with moral teachings, moral precepts, that is always a possibility, right? That potential is always there, is that we become self-righteous. And in that, we become dangerous. And we see this, right? We see this in our world. So it's very important to understand that what you may feel very deeply about and have great conviction and great enthusiasm about is true. And that's very powerful. And yet all that is directed towards doesn't belong to you, right? And doesn't belong to us. And so let's remember that. Next are the three pure precepts. It's because of that you can use them freely. The three pure precepts help us to understand how does the human realm function when it's enlightened, right? How does an enlightened being see the world, experience the world, right? How does their heart turn towards the day? And so these precepts, in one sense, are very simple. Everyone can understand them. And I promise you, you will spend the rest of your lives examining them, practicing them, and realizing them. They will never be fatigued, although you may. But then you just take another step and start again. So. Joking. The first of the three pure precepts is do not create evil. Do not create harm. This helps us to understand that there is no harm or evil that exists in the world on its own. There is no force, no entity, no being that is this. It is its source is our mind, our consciousness, right? Our attachments, our desires, our false views. We are the creators of all that is harmful, which is the good news, because that means we are in an excellent position to fulfill this precept, to not create that harm. And so this is most important, and it's the first precept because it is the essential precept, right? This is where it all begins. Everything else flows from this. Dogen said, this is the abiding place of all Buddhas. It's the very source of all Buddhas. Do not create evil. Will you maintain this?
I vow to not create evil.
The second pure precept is to practice good. Good, too, is this way. It doesn't just exist in the world. We can think that the world is a place that is good, that the world is a beneficent place. But that's our mind bringing a value to the world, which is not a bad thing. But that good itself has no inherent existence. The sense of good depends on everything. And so that too is good news, because it means we can bring that forward, right? Because that is the realm, the field in which we live in. And practice is all about this. And so practicing good is to bring forth good, just that. And practicing good intentionally gives you no object, no time, no place, which is really saying every time, every object, every place, practice good. Dogen says it's the Dharma of Samyak Sambodhi, complete unexcelled enlightenment. This is the way of all Buddhas. Practice good. Will you maintain this?
I vow to practice good.
And then the third pure precept is to actualize good for others. And so to ensure that the good that we're practicing is directly affecting others, is bringing benefit into their lives, is helping to alleviate suffering, we vow to actualize good for others. This is to transcend the profane and to be beyond the holy. This is to liberate oneself and others. Actualize good for others. Will you maintain this?
I vow to actualize good for others.
Okay, now three bows. Now, in a sense, we could have just taken refuge, and that could be the whole receiving of the precepts, if we really understood that. And so, but because we don't yet, we take the pure precepts. In a sense, we could finish here. This is the totality. In a sense, there's nothing more to say. You've already received it. But because we don't yet fully understand that, we have the great precepts. How do we cease from harm? What are the particular aspects of harming within the human realm that we need to pay attention to, that are universal, that cut across all space and time, culture, periods, and so on? And so the great precepts point us to those things. Those things that either because of the impact of one single action has such effect that we should commit to not committing that action, or because the actions are so subtle and so frequent, and in that way seem so unassuming that we don't notice their impact in terms of how they create suffering for ourselves and others. And so the precepts are pointing to that, in a sense, that whole range of such actions. And so this, in more detail, is how the Bodhisattva lives the pure precepts, how we take refuge. Okay. So the first of the great precepts is to affirm life, to not kill. And this is based in the principle of non-harming. And it's recognizing that all of life is a result of karma and conditions, such as I spoke about on Friday. And that as such, it has its own place, its own role to fulfill in this world of interdependence. And to rob that life is to take away that opportunity, particularly within the human realm, because with human consciousness, we have the potential to do so much good. And so, towards all of life. And so to not harm, to not kill, to affirm life, is to really not just recognize that, but to live in that. That everything perfectly covers the ground upon which it stands. It is its own fulfillment. It has its own virtue. And so this is also about not harboring the mind of killing. And in this way, as we spoke about it, it refers principally to life, but also to all forms of killing, taking the life away from anything. Dogen says, life is non-killing. The seed of Buddha grows continuously. Maintain the wisdom life of Buddha and do not kill life. Affirm life, do not kill. Will you maintain this? And Oriyoki is an example of how, because we must take life to live, that's how all life lives, of how we assume responsibility for this precept in our consumption of life. The second great precept is to be giving, to not steal. So this precept brings us to the mind of grasping, of possessiveness. Right, that the nature of desire is to accumulate. The nature is of desire in a grasping mind is to never be enough. It's like the embodiment of the hungry ghost. And to steal, to take that which does not belong to us, is strengthening, manifesting that grasping mind. And so this precept points us to not seeking contentment in things, in superficial pleasures, and power and titles and positions and all the things that we want to take, we want to have and possess. It's really bringing forth the mind of generosity, the great magnanimity of the Buddha. And so it's cultivating a mind free of attachment, a cultivating a mind that is free of the idea of insufficiency, that we are somehow not complete, to not seek things outside of ourselves. Dogen said, the mind and externals are just thus. The gate of liberation is open. Be giving, do not steal. Will you maintain this? The third pure precept is to honor the body. Do not misuse sexuality. And think of this as to honor the person, the whole person. The person which is physical, mental, emotional, intellectual, historical. The whole person. Sexuality is recognized as a very powerful force. Look outside. It's everywhere in springtime. Right? It is the force of life. In the human realm, it has a very particular place within us as human beings. It has the force to bring us closer, to create intimacy, to be an expression of love and trust and caring. It can also, like any great power, be destructive. It can create deep wounds. It can heal deep wounds. It can separate us, mind and body. It can bring together mind and body. So this precept is about not separating ourselves from another, from ourselves, to not objectify, to honor the whole person, and to cultivate trust and deep faith in ourselves and others. The three wheels, body, mouth, and mind, greed, anger, and delusion, are pure and clean. Nothing is desired. Go the same way as the Buddha. Honor the body, do not misuse sexuality. Will you maintain this?
I will not honor the body. I will not misuse sexuality.
And this precept applies to all of us, whether we're in an intimate relationship or not, whether we're young or old. The fourth great precept is to manifest truth, to not lie. So this is a very essential precept because our whole path is one of discovering and living within the true nature, the real nature of things. The first of the Eightfold Path is true, right understanding, right? Not false understanding. It's also encouraging us to have the courage to be truthful and to face truth, which is harder than it sounds. And so to not turn away from what is real, but to turn towards it, to seek what is true, to want to be all that is true. To live without deception is a life really of living without regret. It's a living lightly and gracefully and straightforwardly. And so to manifest truth, do not lie, Dogen says, the Dharma wheel unceasingly turns, and there is neither excess nor incompleteness. Sweet dew permeates the universe. Gain the essence and realize the truth. Manifest truth, do not lie. Will you maintain this?
I will not lie.
And one of the things we discussed and have studied and is our study is that these precepts are not fixed rules. And so there are several ways of understanding them. One is literally just in all times, in all situations, tell the truth. But if we affix to that as a rule, right, then we first become dead. We're not attentive to the moment. We're just applying a rule. And we won't see that there are certain situations in which to do that would actually cause harm. And so the second perspective is out of compassion and reverence for life. When necessary, to not be truthful. Only do so for that reason. And in that way, we actually maintain the precept. And it just means we need to be clear, right? That we're doing that for that purpose and not just to let ourselves off the hook. The fifth precept is to precede clearly, do not cloud the mind. when we practice and encounter the Buddha mind, the luminous mind, the radiant mind, then all of the ways in which we cloud the mind that seem to bring us pleasure or entertainment or take us away from ourselves begin to dim in their pleasure, begin to dim in their enchantment. And so really, the more we practice, the more we see that clouding the mind is less and less interesting, right? Less compelling. And also, from a Buddhist perspective, it is the moment of cloudiness, such as with drink or drugs, or that in which we become lost to ourselves, and we can say things, do things, that last long beyond that moment and that we regret and that cause harm. So it also recognizes that we can put ourselves into a very precarious circumstance internally in a moment of intoxication. It also is pointing to the fact that often when we are seeking to cloud the mind, that we're really seeking to turn away from something that's difficult. The mind is the originally pure and clear Buddha mind. Do not let it become cloudy. Do not be defiled. Proceed clearly. Do not cloud the mind. Will you maintain this?
I vow to see clearly. I will not cloud the mind.
As we practice, this precept, all of these precepts transform, or our understanding transforms. And with this precept, we begin to see that clouding the mind itself is an illusion. The mind is never cloudy. And so that even within a mind of obstructions, right, a mind which previously would have obscured that clarity, that it no longer occurs. The sixth precept is to see the perfection, to not speak of others' errors and faults. So here's a precept that all of us fall into, right? To speak of others' errors and faults. And really the key is to, when necessary, to speak of others' errors and faults. Do so only out of compassion. Do so because it's skillful. Do so without any enjoyment. In other words, without any ill will. And see their perfection. See the person, the Buddha. And then we can see errors and faults just as that, without conflating the two. This is also a way of recognizing that as human beings, we are human beings. Right? That's what we are, right? The idea of perfection is a tyranny. Is a tyranny. It is suffering, right? And so when we think in terms of absolutes, you're all good or all bad. Your practice is perfect or it's a hypocrisy. That is that tyranny speaking. And so to recognize that we need to learn how to fall, because falling occurs, we need to learn how to stand up, because standing is necessary. And then we need to learn how to fall again and again. And to be able to do that, and to be free within our errors and faults, so that we can allow others to be free within their errors and faults, at the same time that we hold ourselves and others accountable. Dogen said that in the midst of the Buddha Dharma, we are the same way, the same Dharma, the same realization, the same practice, not two. Do not speak of others' errors and faults, do not destroy the way. See the perfection, do not speak of others' errors and faults. Will you maintain this?
I vow to see the perfection. I will not speak ill of others' errors and faults.
The next precept is to realize self and others as one. Do not elevate the self and blame others. So this touches on another way of using speech, which all of us are familiar with, where we feel badly about ourselves, and so we find someone else to point out something about them in order to feel better, right? It's very simple, it's very ordinary, and it's creating suffering. And so this is when there is no self-clinging, right? When we're no longer seeking or uplifted by praise, and we're no longer avoiding or are crushed by blame, then we can cease from seeking comfort, in elevating self and blaming others. We recognize in self and other as one that each person is complete, living within their causes and conditions, making their choices, taking responsibility to the degree that they do, and this is where we meet. We too are the same way. And it also points to the fact that nothing we see in another does not exist within us. Everything we see in others exists within us. Different degrees, different expressions. But each of us is a universe, and the same universe. And so in a sense, this is to stay on your own seat. Buddhas and ancestors realize the absolute emptiness and realize the whole earth. When the great body is manifested, there's no outsider inside. When the Dharma body is manifested, there's not even an inch of earth upon which to stand. Realize self and others as one. Do not elevate the self and blame others. Will you maintain this?
I will not elevate the self and blame others.
And the eighth great precept is to give generously, to not be withholding. So to not steal is to not take what doesn't belong to us. It's that mind of acquisition, of possessiveness. This is to have and to not want to release, to not be withholding, to have something that could help someone, material or non-material, and not wanting to, feeling that somehow if we offer this, we will have less. And so it's really pointing to that mind of stinginess, of grasping. It recognizes that when we hold on, we've already lost whatever we wanted to preserve. And that when we let go, the world becomes more abundant. We become more abundant, more expansive. And in that way, as the Buddha said often on many occasions, a blade of grass, a word, a gesture, an expression, a penny has the power to bridge a gap, to offer, to heal. And so really this precept is about, and all of these precepts are about how to live a life that is generous. One phrase, one verse, 10,000 forms, 100 grasses, one dharma, one realization, all Buddhas, all ancestors, the universe itself. Since the beginning, there has never been anything to withhold. Give generously, do not be withholding. Will you maintain this?
I will not be withholding.
Because these precepts are based in the truth of karma, to study and practice these means to really examine the mind that precedes an action, the mind of that action and the mind that follows that action. To recognize that in one action, nothing is finished. It continues. The ninth precept is to actualize harmony. Do not be angry. Anger, of course, is one of the three poisons. It has tremendous force. When it is not based in self-clinging, it has the power to do good. And so there is a fierceness that anger can bring forth that can precipitate change, that can heal, that can awaken. But it also recognizes that more often it is in the destructive realm. And so it helps us to examine our own mind, our mind that is in conflict, the mind of dukkha, and to learn how to not be afraid of anger. First, how to be able to tolerate it within ourselves and others, and then how within anger to manifest compassion. And this is most important, right? How to manifest compassion within anger itself. Most powerful. And to recognize that accepting that which seems unacceptable is not passivity, but actually frees us to respond, to act, to practice. And so really this precept is not saying don't ever be angry, but rather don't indulge anger. Right? Don't become lazy within anger. Understand the power of anger. Examine it. And when necessary, use it, but use it wisely. It is not regressing, it is not advancing, it is not real, it is not unreal. There is an illuminated cloud ocean, there is an ornamented cloud ocean. Dogen is speaking of this, the non-duality of anger. Actualize harmony, do not be angry. Will you maintain this?
I vow to actualize harmony, I will not be angry.
And then the 10th great precept is to experience the intimacy of things, do not defile the three treasures. And so beginning with taking refuge, invoking the three treasures, taking refuge, the last precept is to not defile the three treasures. And so to defile is to want to injure, to harm, to destroy. It is to place ourselves outside, right? And so we spoke about earlier in the week that when we make a commitment, a vow, that when there is difficulty, struggle, when we are angry, when we want to criticize, right, to affect a positive change, that we do so from within the vow. We do that from within the commitment. In other words, we do that within, from within an intimate contact with that which we are criticizing. That's a very, very different thing. And in a sense, this is to not turn against your own home, your natural mind, to take refuge and practice the three treasures and to realize that they are life itself. They give you life. They give each of us life. And in that way, they give others life. To not defile them, but rather experience the intimacy of things. Dogen says, living the Dharma with the whole body and mind is the heart of wisdom and compassion. All virtues return to the ocean of a reality from which they arise. Do not comment on these precepts, but practice them. In other words, don't turn them into abstractions in your mind. Embody them, practice them, make them real, actualize them. Experience the intimacy of things, do not defile the three treasures. Will you maintain this?
I vow to experience the intimacy of things. I will not defile the three treasures.
These 16 precepts, the three treasures, the three pure precepts, and the 10 great precepts were handed down from Shakyamuni Buddha to my teacher, to me, and now to you. I give them to you. Will you maintain them well? Will you maintain them well?
I will.
Will you really maintain them well?
I will.
Okay. Nope. It's not the right one. Hang on. It's this one. And this. I put these in order, so this is my fault. I put them in order, but not the correct order. The robe of the Buddha. The lineage of ancestors. Mountains and rivers order. This is to confirm that Tess Edmonds, having fulfilled the precepts, training requirements of the Mountains and Rivers Order, has on this 12th day of May, 2019, received the 16 precepts of the Buddha Way, the lineage chart, Raksu, and has been given the Dharma name Kisei. Richard Mochiato, having fulfilled the precepts, training requirements of the Mountains and Rivers Order, has on this day, May 12, 2019, received the 16 precepts of the Bodhisattva, the lineage chart, the Raksu, and has been given the Dharma name Seigen. The Kichimyaku, or the lineage chart, is the list of our own lineage of ancestors going back to the Buddha. It's the list that we chant on alternate Sundays. They have also received the list of the women ancestors that we chant on alternate Sundays as a part of their ancestry. So both are present. Ian Falcon, having fulfilled the training requirements of the Mountains and Rivers Order, has on this 12th day of May, 2019, received the 16 precepts of the Buddha Way, the lineage chart, the Raksu, and has been given the Dharma name Joren. Let me dress you here. Blood lineage. Bruce Glick, having fulfilled the training requirements of the Mountains and Rivers Order, has on this 12th day of May, 2019, received the 16 precepts of the Buddha Way, the lineage chart, the Raksu, and has been given the Dharma name Getsudo. Part of the significance of giving the lineage is that in Buddhism, this taking of vows is seen as the formal entry into the family of the Buddha Dharma. Even though we consider Sangha as all practitioners and students as part of that lineage, that this is, in terms of Buddhism, the formal recognition of entering into that living link. Christine Fowl, having fulfilled the precepts training requirements of the Mountains and Rivers Order, has on this 12th day of May, 2019, received the 16 precepts of the Buddha Way, the lineage chart, the Raksu, and has been given the Dharma name Zwimon. Of ancestors. Ellery Eskelin, having fulfilled the precepts training requirements of the Mountains and Rivers Order, has on this 12th day of May, 2019, received the 16 precepts of the Buddha Way, the lineage chart, the Raksu, and has been given the Dharma name Seifu. Okay. And Choki, would everyone please Gassho? When sentient beings receive the sila, they enter the realm of the Buddhas, which is none other than the great enlightenment. Truly they are the children of the Buddha. When sentient beings receive the sila, they enter the realm of the Buddhas, which is none other than the great enlightenment. Truly they are the children of the Buddha. When sentient beings receive the sila, they enter the realm of the Buddhas, which is none other than the great enlightenment. Truly, they are the children of the Buddha. And now the Jisha will guide these six bodhisattvas around the zendo in a walking bow to give everyone an opportunity to recognize and acknowledge and express your gratitude towards their taking vows. So, and Choki, these are words from Dada Roshi to you. When the true eye opens, everything is realized as one. When the Dharma eye opens, one is realized in everything. When the true eye functions, it clears away all discriminating thoughts and allows us to see the pure Dharmakaya, the absolute nature of the universe. When the Dharma eye functions, it creates a clarity that allows us to realize that nothing in this universe is hidden. Everything is just as it is revealed. The true eye is the eye of wisdom, like the diamond sword of Manjushri Bodhisattva, which cuts through all illusions. The Dharma eye is the eye of compassion, the unconditioned love of Samantabhadra, Avalokiteshvara, working for the alleviation of suffering. Everyone has these two eyes, as does the Buddha. When we open both eyes, we realize Buddha mind. When we realize Buddha mind, we see for ourselves as self nature, and Buddha nature are not two, but one. This is the treasury of the true Dharma, I, Shobo Genzo. Let me say a little bit about your names. As is true in many religious traditions, it writes, there's often a rite of passage in which there's a name that's given, a religious name. And so this is a Dharma name. It's a teaching name. Each one is being given to you. And as I spoke about to you earlier or yesterday, it evolves, it transforms, it in a sense goes along with you and changes as your own practice develops. So Tess, your name is Kisei. And Ki, the character Ki, means noble and precious, reverent. And so it's recognized the inherent dignity of yourself, of all things, of others, and the inherent value within all things, within yourself, just through appearing in this world. And in that it is a treasure. It is something to be respected, something to be maintained, and something to be shared. The Bodhisattva regards all beings as worthy, as complete, as having this dignity, this ki. And though all beings do not always act out of this dignity, as is true for each of us ourselves, it's there. We don't always recognize it, but that's what we're practicing to see. That is seeing the perfection. And that requires trust, and it generates trust. The Bodhisattva sees the inner perfection, the ki, the nobility, the dignity. How do we do this? Sei means vow. Vow must come from the heart. It has to come from deep within. And it comes as a result of practice, of examination, of reflection, of confusion, and clarity coming through that confusion. And in that, we come to know our own heart, and we come to trust it. And we begin to know when it's our own heart speaking the truth, and when it's just desire, old habits. Because the vow is an expression of what's true, and it holds us to that, so that we can practice that. And in that way, we should only make vows to that which is true and good. We will accomplish some aspirations in our lives, others we will not. Kisei is undeterred by success and failure, while having great aspiration and the courage to follow this path with heart and use all of those many hands and arms to do so. Noble vow, Kisei. Richard, your name Seigen. Sei means sacred or divine. Master Yunmen said, all the world is medicine. That is an expression of seeing the sacredness in all things. Dogen says, every creature completely fulfills its virtue. That is an expression of the divine, the sacred within all things, sentient and insentient. When we practice, when we get close, when we are intimate, we see this. We see what we call sacredness as a living thing. And we see this living quality, this living nature in everything, animate and inanimate. The artist is one who peers into and tries to see the sacredness and then express it. The mystic is one who realizes this as one's own body and mind and the body and mind of others. Realizing the unity of Buddha nature with all phenomena is the full manifestation of this sacred. It is Prajnaparamita. Gen is the eye that sees the sacredness, that which sees without obstruction, which means it is the eye that also sees the obstruction. And this eye is your eye, your ear, your nose, your tongue, your body, and your mind, so that you can see the great eye, the eye that Dadaroshi just spoke about. The Dharma eye, the true eye, which is your luminous awareness, which is never absent, is always radiant like the sun. So Seigen is sacred eye, the eye that is to be awakened. Ian, your name is Joren. Joe means pure, complete, without any division, undivided. Faith Mind says the slightest distinction separates heaven and earth, but heaven and earth have never been separated. Joe is that, never separated. Nothing has self-nature apart from this. The division only and ever exists in the mind. Sacred and mundane, monastic and lay, mountain in the city, one in the many. Joe is undivided, does not get seduced or deceived by the appearances of things. Ren also means pure, but brings with it the sense of truth, of that which is sound, grounded in reality, that which is true and trustworthy. And it also has the sense of a correct intention, a true intention, like the second of the Eightfold Path, to know what's important and to see this without dividing the world into separate fields, into positioning one thing against another, to enter fully into that which is before you and realize that is your Buddha field. So Joren is undivided truth. Getsudo. Getsu means moon. It's the same character as in Otagaki Rengetsu, the great poet that we chant in our list of women ancestors. Her name was Lotus Moon. So Getsu means moon, which is a symbol of enlightenment in Buddhism. It's always full. It's always complete. It always perfectly manifests. And yet sometimes it appears as full. Sometimes it appears as a sliver. Sometimes it's bright and shining. Sometimes it's hidden in clouds. But it's always full. It's always here. It's always complete. And it's always perfectly reflecting all that appears before it. The sun's radiance in all directions. It cannot be held back. Do is the way, the path, the road. It's the Do of Doshinji. It's the Do of Daido, Roshi. Each and every day, this Do, this way, is the path that you take. When you are awake, when you are asleep, when you're mindful, when you're not, when you walk on it, it is not near or far. And yet when we're deluded, it can appear to be mountains and rivers away from us. Ultimately, we are to see that the way is never anywhere else. It is never anything else. Getsudo is the way of the moon. Every time you look up and look at it, it's shining back at you. Getsudo. Christine, Zwimon. Zwi means auspicious, which means conducive to awakening, conducive to practice, portentous. But in that sense, it's not future-oriented. It's not auspicious about something to come. It is auspicious in this very moment, fully. Zwi is outside of this, not a single thing. Where else would you look? It is, do not judge by any standard. This Zwi. It is not, it can be or become potential. It can be practiced as potential, but it should, that is provisional. Because Zwi is always here and now, auspicious. But how do we enter? How do we manifest this Zwi? Well, we have to enter the gate. And so Mon is gate. All of time, all of space, all things are nothing but Mon. All phenomena, thus, because of this, is Zwi. Because all things are this gate, this Mon, all things are Zwi, auspicious. But due to karma, due to our experiences, inclinations, not all phenomena appear the same. And in that way, some things appear small, some things appear large. Some gates seem large, some gates seem small. And we can use that. When we recognize we stand before a very large gate, We should notice that. We should not disregard any gate, any of the 10,000 things. But when we're in the midst of a powerful gate, we should take note. To recognize and see the gate is good. To enter the gate is better. To realize the gate as your life is best of all. Ultimately, to realize the gate was always open. Zwimon, auspicious gate. And Ellery, your name is Sefu. Se is the same as in Richard's name, Segen. It is the Se of sacred or divine, complete, whole, indestructible. It is the heart of being. And that's why when we come closer, when our practice is stable and alive, we experience that. We come closer to experiencing that sacredness. Students speak of that in hundreds of different ways. But what they're really speaking about and touching is, say, that sacredness. Fu is wind, the breath. It is free and unfettered. Dragons here make their home in this wind, Fu. It has great power. But how is it used? When it's undisciplined, it can cause great damage. When we understand it, when we move with it, when we work, when it's in accord with circumstances, it manifests the great heart of compassion. It gives life. You're a musician. You have devoted your life to wind, the power of wind, and devoting that to having the power to transform, to uplift, to affect. Breath, body, mind, heart are all unified within Sefu, sacred wind. So now what? You have all entered into this vow, this great vow, that you will spend the rest of your lives understanding and developing your understanding and manifesting it. That is the nature of vow. And you have done that today within this group of Sangha members, your family, your friends, those you practice with. And in that way, we are bound together, right? That's why we do this together, right? We bind ourselves together. It makes the vows more powerful. Right, because it makes clear our mutuality more visible, more tangible. And it's important to understand and enter into this implication of a life dedicated to wisdom and compassion, that these precepts are teachings of no rule. And this no rule is not a rigid nor a relativistic morality. It's free. And within its freedom, it is not ambiguous, it is not ambivalent. When we don't see the clarity, that's it. We just don't see the clarity. That's where our practice begins. And so in the presence of these people, you have, all of us together, you have committed yourself to these vows. That is not a small thing. But it is also, at the same time, a simple thing. It is a now thing. It is an everyday thing. It is something you are perfectly suited to do. And so with these vows, your practice and your life has changed in ways that will continue to unfold and surprise you. So prepare to be surprised. May they illuminate your life, and may they bring illumination to the lives of others. May your lives go well.
Thanks so much for listening. For meditation supplies such as meditation cushions, incense, malas, liturgical instruments, books, and more, visit the Monastery Store at monasterystore.org. Support for your spiritual practice at home.